You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
We gotta coordinate that.
I thought we were going to do it at the same time. God,
we were going to.
Damn it, Joel.
Try it again. And two, three.
No, the moment's passed. It is the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
Mine's Joel.
And this is where we come to talk about movies. Sometimes they're bad movies. Sometimes they're movies that are just misunderstood and underappreciated. Whatever the case may be, we bring them here to this forum and talk about them with each other. But we let you listen in.
And sometimes we chime in later.
Like 6 weeks later, someone has some kind of comment about a movie. And we're like, you know what? You were right.
Well, that's the magic of podcasting. Like, they could listen years from now. Years from now, you might get an email from somebody saying, hey, remember that Street Fighter episode?
Not just years from now, but maybe from a galaxy far, far away.
Oh, I see.
Because this is all like just going out there into the universe,
right?
That's
right. All the stars you see in the sky right now, they've all been, all the light that you see.
They're going to hear the Editing Bay podcast in like 7 years.
That's right.
That's probably what's going to happen. All right. So this week, Joel got to pick the movie.
Yeah, sorry.
And it was fucking interminable. Oh my God, man. I was on my way out of I was leaving my place after watching the movie and I was driving out of the parking garage and I was like muttering to myself. I'm like, motherfucker's never going to get to pick a movie again. Never letting him
get some
pick
good ones for every now and then. I'll do a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, and that was in.
That's
enjoyable.
True. That one was a good one. That one was a good one.
But this week,
I did
Short Circuit 2.
Oh my God!
Well, here's the problem, because I overestimated my love for the original Short Circuit. It turns out,
yeah.
I remember liking it when I was a kid, but as all kids are, I have no taste.
Have you watched the original Short Circuit since?
No.
But here's the
thing. I wanted to after this.
About the original Short Circuit touches on every theme that this movie touches on, except in a more skillful way.
Yeah.
And you also have the whole depth of the fact that he was a former weapon.
Yes.
So you have that danger that you're dealing
with
as well.
Iron Giant.
Exactly.
Aspect. It's a much better film.
This one, you've already got a character who's become like this lovable character. You've got Gizmo. It's Gizmo from Gremlins, but he can't get wet anymore. And so there won't be any evil. There isn't that fear that he's going to turn on the human characters.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no stakes. All you've got is just, it's like Home Alone with a robot. You never felt like there was anyone was really ever in any danger. But then on the flip side, like there is like the most terrifying scene in the world in this movie.
I was upset.
Yes.
I was like, I can't believe this is happening.
It was disgusting. It was like it was the accused level disturbance in this movie. And I don't think I'm exaggerating here.
Joe, this movie was rated PG.
Yes.
Can you believe that? And this isn't like pre-PG-13. Like this was 1988.
This should
not have been a PG movie.
It was marketed as a kid's movie.
Yeah, and a lot of it is, because a lot of it's like juvenile. And just like silly jokes. There's a lot of similarities between this and what did we watch recently where it's just like the characters doing silly voices and it's
Father's
all
Day?
Correct.
Robin Williams?
It could have been.
No, I can't remember if it was a different movie. I'm almost thinking it was something else.
I think I might be thinking of Ninja Turtles, where all the references they were making, it was like Michelangelo, but it was all very 90s.
It was all 90s and it didn't make sense.
No.
None of it made sense, even though it wasn't funny because it was told in like a skillful way. It was just, hey, we're referencing something. Isn't that funny that we're referencing it?
Well, it was 30 years ago when that commercial was on the air.
Right.
Now I have no idea what I've fallen in. I can't
get
it means.
Not even that. I mean, you've got like lines where they're like, who'd you expect? The Adams Family?
Oh, yeah.
What does that even fucking mean? No. It didn't mean anything.
Not a joke.
And so, with this movie, that's all this is. All that number five robot, he's just referencing shit. Fucking Steven Spielberg and Michael Bay completely stole the whole model for Bumblebee from Johnny Five.
Yeah, a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Also, WALL-E, I think you could put in that
category.
But WALL-E
didn't
well.
Say anything.
Yeah, he may know. Well,
WALL-E didn't
right.
say, but
you're
I see
right.
where the physical, right. they got like the references for like the physicality.
The face, the eyes, and the brows and everything.
I mean, he
Absolutely.
Did like turn on the TV. And you saw, like, My Fair Lady, I think, was the movie that he was watching.
Mm-hmm.
But WALL-E was a fucking an amazing movie.
I love that movie.
It's my favorite Pixar film.
What?
It is. It's absolutely my favorite Pixar film.
Top five, but I got to give it to The Incredibles.
I love The Incredibles, and The Incredibles was
Thank
my
you.
Favorite
Jeff agrees.
Until WALL-E. Yeah? I really love WALL-E. I connect with it.
You know what? And just to get off on this tangent.
Jeff's shaking his head. Jeff, you need you need to recognize human emotion to understand and appreciate WALL-E. I mean, look at you. You
He's
took
like
all
a
your
robot.
Toppings off of a cheeseburger.
He's like Johnny Five
you
before
You can't
the
understand
lightning
enjoyment. You can't understand depth and levels
it's
because
painful.
You took all the levels off of your food.
This is not We're making it about you, Jeff.
All right. So, Short Circuit 2.
Yes.
And we took a minor character from the first Short Circuit movie.
This is the problem, yes. This is how not to make a sequel, everybody.
Yeah.
You take one of the characters and like, man.
He was the comic relief
of
the first movie.
He was a side character that people kind of remember.
Yeah.
A little bit of a racial stereotype.
An absolute racial stereotype. In fact, like, there's a few of those in this movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, you took, like, the most minor character from the first movie. I mean, the only way you get any less of a character in the first Short Circuit is if you're, like, robots number 1 through 4.
Yeah, that's true.
That's pretty much it.
I mean, I guess you get some of the villains, but yeah, this is the only protagonist.
This
that,
guy,
and
it was just that he stood out because Fisher Stevens, I think, was the name of the
that's
actor.
That's the actor's name, that's right.
He did an amazing, whether it was racially fueled or not, like, he does a really good impression. He plays a good character. He doesn't make him dumb.
No.
And which is important
that's
to
why
state.
I give it a pass, too. And they do play off, like, he keeps mispronouncing, phrases and words and getting them backwards.
Yeah.
And the comedy comes from that. I don't think it's offensive.
No.
But I'm not Indian. I might feel a different way.
Exactly. That's true. So they take him, and he had a couple of little one-liners in the first movie that people loved. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper, too?
That's right.
That stuff. But then they decided to just revolve an entire movie around this character.
Yeah.
And, like, he plays off. Like, we're not shown anything. We're just told all this exposition of, like, I want to make these toys, but I'm going to reach out to my friends Newton and Stephanie in Montana. Like, suddenly they're all besties. Like,
I like that, too. Yeah, so that's the Ally Sheedy and Steve Guttenberg characters from that.
Yeah.
Which I can't... Okay, Ally Sheedy, I can understand. Maybe she doesn't want to come back. Maybe she feels like she's above it. It made a lot of money, so it's
surprising. I kind of feel like if anybody was going to come back of that duo, it would have been Sheedy. Because the Goot was a little more popular at the time.
Was he?
He had the Police Academy movies under his arm. He did Three Men and a Baby.
He
was starting to kind of hit his peak, and so he was a little too big for Short Circuit 2.
Well, he did an interview recently.
Now he would die to do freaking Short Circuit 3.
He said he regrets not doing it, and, and is really vying for the reboot. They're doing a reboot of this, apparently.
Of course they are. Of course they are, because they haven't bastardized everything yet from the 80s.
Yeah.
Why not Short Circuit as well? So this guy, Ben... Mm-hmm. He's kind of trying to hustle his Johnny Five looking toys on the street in New York.
Yep.
And he's next to Michael McKean, who you might know from, like, This Is Spinal Tap and in Laverne and Shirley.
Oh yeah. Did a stint on SNL.
Yeah, yeah. So he's trying to sell these knockoff watches, and, like, you know, this little Johnny Five robot makes its way into a department store.
Yeah, he's made these little half size replicas toys he's trying to sell.
And
I do like that opening sequence, by the way.
I liked it, and it I didn't cute. Like it at the same time. Like, I kind of thought it was...
It was schlocky.
It was, from a production standpoint, I think this is something that you will recognize as well. I thought that the direction of that sequence, the extras direction and stuff, was horrible. Like, you saw the same, like, four extras everywhere that robot went.
I was
like,
just...
the woman in the blue dress, I saw eight times... While this robot was rolling around.
I didn't notice her, but I was distracted by, like, the UPS guy pushing the boxes. You can only see his eyes, but he's... You know when somebody tells you, hey, don't look at the camera?
Uh-huh.
Well, they weren't going to until you said that, and now they can't do anything but look at the camera. So he's trying wildly to look around it, and all you can see is his eyes, too, and it's so distracting.
Yeah, absolutely.
The little robot got upstaged by the extra.
Yeah, he did. So the robot makes its way past Cynthia Gibb, who you might know from the Rob Lowe movie Youngblood.
Little cutie.
She is cute.
This
she
is all I
cute.
Knew her from.
She still is, too. She's a hell of a looker.
I'll admit I did some Google imaging searching afterwards.
Well, no, I did, too, because I want to know, like, has she done
Where
anything recently?
Exactly.
What's she doing now?
Is she
dead?
Part of the leak that happened a couple of weeks ago?
Oh,
maybe?
My God, Joel.
Just saying.
No, but Johnny Five is. We could see him.
Just covered in motor oil. Sorry.
With Rosie the robot from the Jetsons.
Oh,
I went too far. So she finds this Johnny Five robot, and she goes down to Fisher Stevens, like, hey, is this yours? Yes, that's mine. My boss wants this. We find out that she's, like, in charge of, like, you know, trying to bring the boss, like, new orders, new merchandise
toys
that they can sell for Christmas.
Right.
And she wants these. Oh, yes, I could do this. All right, well, I want 1,000 units. How long is that going to take? I can get those to you by October. Wonderful. 1993. So he and Michael McKean kind of swindles his way in, and he tries to help him out on this deal while obviously trying to get his own beak wet as well. And is like, oh, no, we can take care of it. Don't worry. How much you want to pay us per unit? And so he goes into business with Ben.
Awfully trusting, I would say, for like a street swindler who's selling knockoff Rolexes, that he's just going to help this guy out of the kindness of his heart. Well, goes to this kind of mob boss guy to get a bunch of money up front. It's like, what's in?
He was going to get some money out of it. He was going to try to take at least 50% of the take on this, which would have been a lot of money, man.
Yeah, yeah.
25 grand, not bad. Not bad little take for just kind of helping a guy assemble a few robots.
I hear you.
I don't mind that so much. I kind of thought that was fine. I thought that that Ben stuck to character where he was a little naive and he was just kind of like, I don't know. I'm learning the American way. I used to work for the military. Now I'm in the private sector. But that, and Michael McKean as well, I thought that he played it fine because he was still shady. He was still a bit of a shyster even throughout the movie. He kept true to his character.
I can't wait for you to hear that recast. For
that, that was fine. It's not until, like you pointed out just now, he goes to this mob boss to get the money to do this, and we never revisit that again. Like, it's mentioned a couple times, but that, like, that's something that should have been a through line. That's something that should have fueled it. That should have been what our antagonists were going to be in this movie.
I guess maybe they figured there are way too many criminals in this movie already as
there,
it is.
There are as many criminals in this movie as there are B-plots. There's so many B-plots going on in this movie. You know, you got to be careful or else you're going to step right on one. And the A-plot itself is so flimsy at best.
I guess that's why they need them.
Tell us more about this movie, Joel.
So that's, okay. Well, I don't know how much backstory we need to give. If you're listening to this podcast, surely you've at least heard of Short Circuit, if not seen it. Hell, you may have even seen the sequel. I saw this in theaters, Joe.
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't see this till it hit cable.
This is only the second time in my life I've seen it because even at the young, tender age of, you know, 12 or whatever I was, I recognize this for the shit that it was. Again, it's like all the things you love about the first movie are totally absent in this one, save for Johnny Five. But even then.
But the theme of I'm alive, I'm sentient, like that's still there.
Yeah.
They still try to touch on that. Those themes, some of those themes are still in this movie.
A little bit.
Problem is we've already rectified that. We resolved those things in the first film.
Yeah, didn't you? Isn't there a Wolverine movie that you called out for? The same thing that he keeps going through the same growth.
Oh,
and it's like they keep resetting in every movie he's in. Was it Wolverine?
They keep kind of resetting it.
There was some character.
I can't remember life of me. I can't remember what it was.
So Short Circuit. Johnny Five is a military robot. Gets struck by lightning in the first movie, and all of a sudden he has life because we all know that's where life comes from.
That's how it happened. Frankenstein
gets struck by lightning.
Yeah.
But the whole first movie was kind of about him learning and then learning like what death was and that he can disassemble.
Yes.
No, disassemble Johnny Five.
Uh-huh.
And so there was a message there. And again, yeah, I guess we kind of revisit some of those themes. But
we absolutely do. The fragility of life.
Right.
And that I am a person as well because I think
all
therefore
over the place.
I have a soul.
He won't fucking shut up about he's quoting Shakespeare. And
yes.
Yeah. But just not, like you said, not done as skillfully. So, man, 15 minutes go by in this movie before the fucking robot even shows up, too. And it's a long 15 minutes because we're spent with the side character from the first movie, Michael McKean.
And Michael McKean.
Who's actually really great in this movie.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. I think Michael McKean's really good. I think sometimes he gets an unfair shake when he's in stuff that isn't like, you know, this is Spinal Tap or whatever.
The mockumentary.
Yeah, exactly. I can't
Christopher
remember.
Guest.
Christopher Guest movies.
Mm-hmm.
That or Clue.
Ooh.
Yeah, Mr. Green.
Love Clue.
He's so good in that. I'm going to go home and have
sleep with my wife.
I keep misquoting it. I always think I'm going to go home and have sex with my wife.
You're dirtying it up.
I think he's really good in this movie,
yeah,
and I think he holds his own. He holds his own. He holds his own. His comedic timing is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, he's able to play the heavy when it becomes necessary to play the heavy.
He does, and also playing against an inanimate object, or at least, you know, the robot, who I'm impressed by the robotics that were
the animatronic.
Thank you. Yeah,
the puppetry.
You know, this is 88. We take the shit for granted. They would have done it all computers nowadays. There may have been some practical stuff, but you know,
when did the first Ninja Turtle movie come out? 89. 90.
I want to say it was, man, it may have been the same year, 88 potentially.
Well, because Ninja Turtles came out after Batman, and Batman came out in 89. So
yeah,
maybe
yeah,
it
right.
was 89
well,
or 90.
Right.
But so, I mean, it's only 2 years before Ninja Turtles, and that was some good animatronic
stuff. It was, too, but again, they just had the one helmet. This thing is like fucking, first of all, it's got to move itself. At one point, Michael McKean is writing it.
Yeah, that's
true. So it's got to be able to carry him.
Well, and we also got to consider that this is the sequel, and the original version came out, what, like in 85?
86.
86.
So like 2 years prior.
Yeah.
And apparently in both movies, like the majority of the funds, like the budget, went to the robot.
To the robot, yeah.
As you would expect. And I got to say, it shows. Man, I was, this movie and the previous one got me heavy into robots.
Yeah.
To the point where I was buying like radio-controlled cars, like the little cheap ones, and tearing them apart and reverse engineering, like getting the motors out of them.
Yeah.
I tried to make my own Johnny Five. Unsuccessful. But still, it was inspiring, and so even watching it again, I'm like, man, there's some really good shit going. Because it takes like four puppeteers to make this.
Yeah,
thing
you
work.
Watch the credits. It says Johnny Five, and it's like four or five names included on it,
and then ruined by the guy doing the voice.
The guy who does the voice, man.
I don't remember it bugging me in the first movie that much, but this one
because
it really,
I don't think he talked as much in the first.
I think you're right, and it was limited to kind of like phrases. He was very like, I am Groot-ish. Like,
uh-huh.
It was just
had
a couple phrases now and then that he kept going back to,
and like he would quote some TV stuff. I remember he had his whole dance sequence with Stephanie where he's singing More Than a Woman, but a lot of his stuff was like references to what he heard, but it wasn't like obnoxious.
Yeah.
In this one, like we've already pointed out, it was like Ninja Turtles 3.
Yeah.
He's just like obnoxiously quoting everything, and like he's kind of an idiot.
yeah.
And he
it's
wasn't
a child.
He wasn't really this dumb by the end of the first movie.
Yeah.
But like he's walking around the city and he's like, "Oh, a bookstore," and like runs in the
input. Yeah.
It's like, "Wait a minute, like you were told like, hey, hang out here." You know, at least at the end of the first movie, he has this weird, you know, you get a sense that Johnny Five understands a responsibility to himself and to the people that trust him and that he trusts. And so when the Ben character, who I just find it so funny that he's like, "Ben, my friend." I'm like, dude, you guys didn't spend like any time with each other in that first movie, but suddenly, like, through convenience, you're best friends.
Mm-hmm.
He tells him, he's like, "Just stay here and do this work." Okay. Dude, just stay in the fucking place. Now, I understand that means that then there's no conflict in this movie, but just stay in this place. They could have been a little bit more creative with what they did with this movie. We did not need to see Johnny Five discovering the world again. Through robot eyes.
Yeah.
We've already done that.
While going through like indentured servitude, we should mention. What the hell? Okay, so 15 minutes go by, and he finally shows up because they've got this plot, and they have to create 1,000 of these little mini robots.
Uh-huh.
And somehow Steve Guttenberg and Ali Sheedy, unseen.
They don't have enough money. We hear Ali Sheedy.
Yeah.
They don't have money to send Ben.
Right.
But they said, they're like, the best way we could think to help is to send Johnny Five. He can help you build these things.
So let's dissect the timeline here because
everything happens in an afternoon.
Yeah, really. Like, or maybe 24 hours. And all of a sudden, like, you know, and so we're to believe that in like, what, a couple of, I'll give them 48 hours. How about that?
Okay.
That they sign this deal, that they got to make 1,000 of these things. They realize they don't have the money. Like, this is before the internet. Like, nobody's emailed. Like, how did they get wind? Because apparently, like, Ali Sheedy and Steve Guttenberg are in some cabin somewhere.
In Montana.
Johnny Five in Montana. and yet, you know, overnight, they've shipped Johnny Five. Oh, hey, we heard you're a little in a pickle.
So we thought we'd send our super secret, like, illegal, militarized robot friend.
Via FedEx overnight. He just shows up in a box outside of this warehouse, you know, in some back alley in fucking New York.
They couldn't even pay an extra to be a UPS guy.
Yeah.
He got a voice off stage.
Or to make a phone call. But hey, you're going to get a package tomorrow. It's going to be kind of heavy, and it might try to crush you. Just FYI, you know, good looking out. By the way, you mentioned Ali Sheedy, like, doing the voiceover. So, like, Johnny Five, like, has a recording of her.
So fucking phoned in, like, literally
phoned
in.
Doesn't she sound like one of those Al-Qaeda videos?
Yes.
I am being treated well.
I am being treated well.
Here's Johnny Five.
This is against
friend.
American militarization. And
we call for the removal of all troops out of Iraq.
And so we offer, no, or like Mark Hamill. In Return of the Jedi, when C-3PO and R2-D2 are in Jabba's place, like, I offer you a gift, these two droids. And that was more of a physical thing that I just did. But it's so like a bad like used car salesman commercial where he's like, we have got deals for you.
And it's not like she has a very distinct voice. Like, it's not fucking Sarah Silverman. Like, just get an actress that sounds like Ali Sheedy.
Yeah.
and have her put some heart in it.
Right. What I love, though, is that Ally Sheedy definitely, she got billed in this movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She probably got a nice paycheck for it.
Oh, my God.
Again, she probably should have been in this sequel.
Yeah.
It
would
have been nice. But they
should have both been in the sequel.
Yeah.
Okay, first off, you have to explore why would you make a sequel to this movie? I assume because the first one was a huge financial success.
I think it made a lot of money. It wasn't a critical success, surprising enough to me. I thought it was going to be in the 60s and 70s, maybe. It was like 57%.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed.
Well,
me want to revisit.
Let's be honest, though. A lot of you guys go to the Rotten Tomatoes page, and that's
familiar with.
You know, those are modern reviewers that are going back and reviewing older movies. So if we were to go back and look at like the critical reception in the day, it was probably a little more favorable than what you're going to find on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think you're probably right.
But the second movie, I'm very curious. How much did the second movie cost to make, and what did it make?
I think it cost like $21 million, or maybe it made $21 million. I'm gonna have to. I didn't jot that one down this time. We're
okay.
Have to look
well,
that
while,
up
while you're looking that up, I do want to kind of outline a little bit more what happens with Johnny Five. He realizes he's in New York City. Ben's in a meeting to try to finalize this deal, and he realizes he's in New York City, and he tells Michael McKean, I'm going to go get some input. I'm going to go find out what the hell's going on around here.
It sounds dirty when you say it.
Yeah, it does. Jeff. It sounds so dirty. And so he goes joyriding around, and he finds this like gang, Los Locos or whatever, and they're ripping off car stereos. Yeah.
Los Locos kick your ass. Los Lobos kick your face.
Los Lobos kick your balls into outer space.
That's what it is.
Yes.
Wow. What an unterrifying gang.
They're the least terrifying gang in the world.
Like,
but
West Side Story gangs were more menacing.
Did you not think that maybe it would have been a little bit more fitting at the end, like when Johnny Five was like all torn up and shit and like trying to take out the bad guys, that like maybe like that gang sees him torn up and they're like, hey man, that's our guy.
Wouldn't
that have been funny to see like those guys like show up and be like, no one messes with our Johnny Five, and like they help them out at the end.
Yeah,
that would have been really cool. That would have been a great callback to what happened earlier.
Everybody hates this. All right, so I'm a little perturbed by the way people are reacting to him on the streets.
Oh, yeah.
So here's this, what we're told, an $11 million robot.
Uh-huh.
Even if you don't know the price tag, pretty impressive to see this fucking guy rolling down the streets.
Yes.
Talking.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and people are just kind of giving him an odd look. Like, this isn't Crocodile Dundee. This isn't some guy in a leather vest walking down the street. You know,
yeah,
this
yeah.
is a fucking
it's
robot,
a robot
you've never seen before.
Uh-huh.
And people, at best, they're giving him an awkward eye. At worst, they're fucking, they hate him, and they're trying to destroy him.
For the most part, though, people are
ostracizing.
People are reacting to him like he's being remote controlled from somewhere else.
Right, right, right. The cops.
The cops are like that. The priest was like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was good. That was good that they did it like that. That was kind of an aspect of the movie that I didn't appreciate as much when I was younger, when I first saw it. I was like, why aren't they understanding him? Why don't they listen to him?
I know.
And now as an older person, I'm like, yeah, I would think that it was someone with a fucking radio control robot as well.
Fucking around, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, you're right. People like have this weird like just animosity towards Johnny Five, though.
Yeah.
That's kind of, it's inexplainable.
Yeah.
It's just because it's convenient to the script.
I was going to say, it's really trying to hammer home that story about, you know, he's just trying to fit in and he's trying to understand and nobody appreciates him.
Yeah.
He's a sentient being.
So he helps these guys rip off a bunch of stereos and, you know, that's when he learns, oh, there's right and wrong and we don't steal, which kind of sets up, we're Chekhov's gunning some...
Oh my God, so many guns.
Yes, there are so many guns. But we are now like establishing, okay, now he's going to start learning like right and wrong and stealing is wrong and these are the things that constitute stealing. Just in time for him to make a new friend, Oscar, who's this nice old man that works at a bank, but is actually an inside man for a bank job.
He's the mastermind
behind.
Yeah, so we learn early on that this warehouse that Ben and Fred, is that the Michael McKean?
Yeah, Fred and Ben.
Fred, that they've set up shop in to build all these little toys, is actually above a secret tunnel that's being burrowed by these two guys, these two hired hands, because they're going to steal some diamonds. Oh, yeah. So, again, it's the fucking 1990s. What was our obsession with, like, diamonds?
I don't know.
Thievery. Every other movie had, like, a diamond heist going on.
I think it's because diamond and jewel props were easy to come by.
You think so?
Yeah.
Go down to Claire's in the mall
get
yourself a couple of million
because
dollars.
Because there's no way you could, because fake money looks fake on screen. But you get jewels, like, any. You can't. It's not like someone can authenticate the jewels just by looking at them on the screen.
All right.
And then you put them through like the Barbara Walters soft lens.
Yeah, that cheese.
Yes. And suddenly they look like, ooh, they're sparkly and valuable. So who's to say any different? It was easy then. Jewels were kind of a hot, you know, it's a hot commodity.
I just don't feel like that there's this much jewel thievery going on in the world at all, like ever.
Not
like
now.
If you brought aliens down and just showed them movies from the 1980s and 90s, they would think that the number one crime being committed was jewel thievery.
I mean, that was the focus of the Great Muppet Caper.
This is what I'm saying. Also circa 1980, yes. Mid-80s.
Which was a far better heist film than this was.
Oh, of course. It had fucking Muppets in it.
Yeah. So Johnny Five... unbeknownst to him and his circuitry, ends up getting duped into helping these guys dig a tunnel to the bank so that way they can steal the jewels.
Right. That's the best thing you can do with an $11 million robot. You can't be a little more creative.
Not like shut it down and try to sell it.
Yeah, well.
Because I think the robot in itself was probably worth more than the jewels.
Exactly.
Were.
Yeah, yeah. I think they said later like $30 million.
Oh, okay.
But still.
All right.
And to be fair, probably easier to move some stolen jewelry on the black market
than
a fucking robot that'll talk back to you.
Here's my thing.
Yeah.
You would think that this robot was the cause of great concern in the first movie, like military security, national security.
This is what I'm saying.
And now it's walking around the streets of New York, and like no one recognizes it. Like there was never like a newspaper report that came out like, hey, rogue robot, killer robot on the loose. That's something they could have played off of to explain why people were scared of it as it was going down the street or whatever.
And yeah, do you remember when Michael McKean like tries to sell him?
Because
so he's trying to sell him. Who's he selling him to?
I don't know who.
But somehow the people he's selling them to like know all the backstory.
Yeah.
Oh, wasn't this the robot that was built by? And they mentioned the Steve Guttenberg character's name. They know the backstory.
Exactly.
So nobody's gonna make some phone calls and be like, "Hey, government.
Hey, Pentagon.
We found your
robot that was hiding in Montana.
Remember the one with the nuclear bomb strapped to its back that almost killed us all?
So not only that, but by the end of the movie, this thing gets like painted gold. And like become a U.S. citizen. It's given its citizenship, and there's like newspaper articles written about it, and like there's no government agencies that are like, wait a minute, this is stolen property.
Looks familiar.
You can't have this. All right, so
yeah, dubious.
So there's there are trials and tribulations for our heroes, and ultimately they all come out on top. And form a multi-billion-dollar corporation within, like, a week, I guess.
Yeah.
As you pointed out earlier, time is very, like...
It's nebulous.
It is. It's just... it's time fluid. Is more of a suggestion in this movie than anything else.
No idea how this happens.
I have to tell you, like, the thing that I think hurt this movie more than you may have considered is the score. I don't know if you thought this much about it, but, like, while I'm watching the movie, I just felt like the whole time... And I referenced Home Alone earlier... Like Home Alone or Baby's Day Out, like the most unoffensive kind of score, like something that's not going to get you too excited.
Yeah.
It's just like you could just sit in the theater and like just eat your popcorn and not feel anything and forget everything that you watched after you've like 15 minutes after you've walked out of the theater. That's how that score felt because like nothing was ever underscored properly. It felt like
no, you're absolutely right. At least it was a vanilla, and at worst it was inappropriate for the scenes.
Yeah,
like sometimes there was some heavy shit going on, and then you've got the doop 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 underneath it, or vice versa.
The only time the music felt even a little bit appropriate was at the very end when Johnny Five's like just taking it down the docks
when he's chasing
after
down
the dude
Oscar.
On the boat, and we've got I Need a Hero.
Yeah,
I'm like, all right, this fits, and suddenly. The only time in this movie where I was like, okay, I'm kind of invested in what's going on. Because suddenly everything kind of fits.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chase going on. You've got this music going on. It's a little, you know, the tempo's up tempo. And, you know, there's a little bit of a sense of, is the bad guy going to get away?
Right.
What's going to happen?
There's some danger going on.
You know, Johnny's been manipulated and now he's upset in a kid's movie declares, I am pissed off.
Okay, there you go. Back again to the PG-13. There is a lot of cursing
there's
in here.
A lot of cursing.
I counted
in this movie.
Three goddams. There's some shits. There's some asses.
Uh-huh.
And then the main character, the robot. And can't you see like 7 and 8 year old kids like
saying that? As
that
soon
would be
as
their
they leave
favorite
the
moment. Oh, in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
Like I know those. You know, I was one of those kids. But yeah, it's like be a little more responsible with your cursing in this movie. And also, as long as we're talking about responsibility, you touched on it earlier. And I think it's germane because you're talking about how jacked up Johnny Five is at the end.
The scene outside the park.
So the reason he is so pissed off, there is a brutal. It's funny that we both use the same word.
Yes.
It was shocking to a 36-year-old. To me.
What was more shocking to you? Was it the way that it was filmed? Because, like, they have a bit where, like, one of the criminals hits him and, like, some battery fluid pops out and, like,
it sprays like blood on the other guy.
Blood on the other guy, and the other guy's like, and he looks like a little horrified, and then, like, kind of against his better judgment, ends up attacking him, too.
Right.
Like, that was horrifying. The dude doing the voice acting for Johnny Five just being like, no. Getting fucking smashed in the eyes. I was terrified. I'm sitting there in my apartment going, this is fucking horrible. This is so gruesome watching this happen
it's
right
awful.
Now.
Three guys beating him with like crowbars. And again, just out of malice, because Oscar, you know, the boss hog of the group.
Yes.
Thinks, you know, this robot can identify.
This robot could be a material witness.
So, <yeah. laughs> who's going to believe him? Nobody even fucking believes he's alive,
exactly.
Much less that some fat guy masterminded this jewel thief.
But that he's a material, this robot's a material witness to a crime.
He can make us. We gotta.
He's the accessory. He is the one that committed the crime.
So they're going at him with crowbars, and yeah, it's like slow motion. He finally gets knocked over, and then yeah, the one crowbar just goes into his eye.
Yeah.
I have no words.
It was shocking.
It was really disturbing.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, even as a grown man, I knew it wasn't. You know, I just have to keep telling myself it's just a movie, Joel.
It's just a
but
robot.
I was like, this is way too far. Wasn't I traumatized more by this as a child?
It went way too far. Do you think that it would have been more effective if they'd done that all off screen? Like that suddenly, like they knocked him down and he fell and he's like, he's a witness. We got to take care of him. And then we cut to Ben and Fred or whatever. And then, like, we cut to after the cops come in and they bust Ben and Sandy, and Fred gets away. And then we cut to Fred and he's walking down the street and he sees Five and he's kind of torn up.
That might have been a little better.
That would have been a little better. I think what really made that scene, as gruesome as it was, like I said, was the reaction shot. And then, like, just the reactions and the slow-mo of him getting beat.
Yeah.
It was...
And the voiceover, he's just like, no. Like, you know, he's this... It's like if Bugs Bunny were being fucking maimed.
Just
skinned alive
it's like
in
that,
a Warner
that
Brothers
family,
cartoon.
The Family Guy bit where Bugs Bunny actually gets, like, shot and then his neck broken.
Oh, my God.
And then dragged off.
Yeah.
Like, that's terrifying. It scars somebody.
And, you know, amongst the horror, the thoughts I was having, another one was...
It was gratuitous. It was just, we'll call it what it is. It was ridiculously gratuitous, and it was... It
could have been...
It's the attempt of a poor filmmaker to try to elicit a response from an audience.
Tone deaf, yeah. Could have been a little more tastefully done.
Yeah.
But also, I was kind of impressed that, you know, for a movie that 75% of its budget, you know, went to these robots, because they had to build like four or five, probably five, it's Johnny Five, that they... this is the one that they just get to wreck.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, this is the Johnny Five we're going to mutilate.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. I kind of appreciate that. Speaking of budget, were we able to... like?
You didn't find it?
Well, the only budget I'm able to find is... or not budget, but the box office. So, I was right. We made $21 million, but I can't find the budget anywhere, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't think that...
So, maybe it didn't make its money, right?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I would think at the time, a movie like this probably would have cost almost exactly that.
Yeah,
maybe
I know.
Maybe it made a little bit of money.
I think it's telling that when they released this on Blu-ray, you couldn't just buy Short Circuit. You had to buy them as
you
a
had
box
to get
set.
Them as a set.
So maybe this is their way of we're going to charge $5 more and recoup our losses.
It's also telling to me when you can only find Short Circuit 2 on Netflix and not the first one.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're like, oh, we'll make you pay for the first
one's too valuable.
You've got to pay for that one.
Showtime has that until 2015.
Second one, you fucking give it to you.
Well, they probably threw it in with, like, Batman Begins. Or Forever, probably.
Oh, my
Batman
God.
Batman and Robin.
I was about to say, man, Batman Begins is a pretty decent movie.
Hey, I want to throw one more trope out here.
Let's do it.
So, just in the whole 80s movie with, you know, jewel thieves, another trope with just film in general is taking a sequel, making a shitty sequel to a movie, but setting it in New York.
Uh-huh.
And this is another one of those, like...
Like Home Alone,
like Crocodile Dundee. Uh-huh. Like,
well, Crocodile Dundee 1 was in New York.
Oh, the second
that was
one was
the
in...
Whole, they were both,
the second
like,
one they went back.
They went back to the Outback.
That's right.
In Crocodile Dundee.
And then the third one they went to L.A.
And the third one they went to,
oh,
yes.
My bad. Never mind.
Yeah, they did.
Did you ever see that third one?
I have not, no.
Well, we'll be doing that in an episode.
Oh,
that's
shit.
My next pick, folks.
God damn.
All right, well then never mind.
Yeah, no.
Sharknado 2 also sent me.
Yes, Sharknado 2.
Should mention.
Which I don't know if is if it's a step up or a step down. Mm-hmm. Sharknado 2 just kind of seems like
more of a lateral move.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would almost say that Sharknado 2 is a successful sequel.
Oh, I dug the hell out of it. Of course, I was also drunk watching it with you and 20 other people, so that sometimes helps.
So you brought up the fact that this was made in New York. It's mm-hmm. a trope of bad 80s movies that a sequel takes place in New York. I felt like if you're building up this whole thing that he's in New York City, yet at no time do we ever get like the benefit of like any cool New York, like some landmarks,
because it was shot in Toronto.
It was shot, well, there was a Toronto crew, a New York crew, and an LA crew.
Oh, really?
So there were things that were shot in New York.
Oh.
Why not even get some fucking some stock footage of some landmarks? They don't even do that, Joel.
Yeah.
There's not even any establishing shots of like, here's the World Trade Center, here's Statue of Liberty,
right.
Here's the Empire State Building, here's fucking Rockefeller Center.
Yeah.
How cool would it have been if like Johnny Five
rolling
in front of Rockefeller Center or something? If they're talking about it being close to Christmas time, maybe everybody's like ice skating, and there he comes out there. That would have been a sweet moment.
Falls
almost
through the ice.
Almost reminiscent. He can't fall through that ice.
That's true.
Almost reminiscent of the scene in the first one where he's dancing with Stephanie. Yeah. In the shack, he could be dancing with someone on the ice in Rockefeller Center.
Yeah.
You know what trope they should have done in this movie? This like a total sequel trope, a female Johnny Five.
Oh my God,
there
you're right.
There should have been a female Johnny Five in this. There should have been a love interest.
And
in
that's
this
how
movie.
You set up for the third sequel
with
babies.
Exactly,
baby
Johnny
Fives.
Johnny Fives.
Johnny 15.
And then like it's all about them learning about their humanity.
Mm. Wow, that brings up a whole other... Because
right?
immediately my mind goes to, how do they procreate?
We're in Isaac Asimov territory now. All right, so as far as the performances go in this movie,
sure.
I really can't... Other than some of the villain characters,
ugh.
I thought everybody did a good job for what they were hired for. They did what they were hired to do. I just think they were all victim of a horrible script
mm-hmm.
that was produced pretty shittily.
Yeah.
Shittily. Why not?
Yeah. No, it was. I'll give an exception to, what's the chick's name? I was not jazzed by her. She's a pretty face.
Cynthia Gibb.
And she did what she had to do, I guess, but she didn't overcome the script. Whereas I felt like Ben, like I really liked him. He was a sweet guy.
Yeah.
Did the accent well, but somehow seemed to make it not be as offensive as it could have been, as maybe a lesser actor would have done.
Uh-huh. Kind of like a classier version of Hank Azaria
doing
the Simpsons Apu character.
There you go. Very nice. Yeah. And he's an actual character. He's not just some stereotype. Which,
exactly.
You know, kudos to him.
Uh-huh.
Same thing with Michael McKean. Michael McKean's great in
this.
Oh, yeah. I loved him in this.
And when he finds Johnny Five and has to, like, fix him up,
that's
an actual really good tender moment between the characters.
Yeah, and there's the whole scene where they go into the Radio Shack to repair him, and he's trying to... And man, damn if I didn't believe that like he cared about this robot.
Yeah.
He was really trying his best and you know.
There's moments of good characterization. I don't know if it's good writing, but moments of good characterization where he's like, you know, hell, he's telling Johnny Five. Johnny Five feels bad because he trusted Oscar. And he's like, hell, I trusted him, you know? And you know why? Why would you even trust these people? Why do you trust me? I tried to cash in on you too. Mm-hmm. Like it's a really nice, genuine scene between him and an inanimate object.
Yeah.
He does a fantastic job. I feel like the dude, like I said earlier, he's not given enough credit when you do see him in films that aren't Christopher Guest or Clue. Like sometimes he kind of gets swept under the rug, and I don't think he deserves it. I think he's a good character actor.
Yeah, he was really solid in this, and I liked him as better than the main character, I think, just because of those moments they had.
He had depth.
Mm-hmm.
He actually had depth. He had an arc.
He did come around, didn't
he? Yeah, does. He goes on a journey where Ben... goes from being single Ben to Ben with a girlfriend. Like that's pretty much the only journey he goes on. But
there's
sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's another issue I had. That whole forced kind of love story where he's trying to win. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the many B plots that they threw into this movie that we didn't need.
Didn't need it.
We didn't need a love interest for Ben. We needed one for Johnny.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That would have been fun.
Although I did kind of enjoy the little Cyrano de Bergerac scene where, you know, he's Ben is with, what's her name? What's her character's name?
Sandy.
And they're on the side of the street and Johnny Five is controlling like a light up billboard off in the distance and like feeding him lines.
Yeah.
You know, that was cute.
Yeah. What did you think about the scene when Fred and Ben are stuck in the refrigerator? in the walk-in.
Now we're talking.
And, like, they call up her phone, and she hears the messages, and it's, like, tones to a song, and immediately pieces together Ben's in trouble.
Well, they set up earlier, because they had, at that same night, their one date night, and they had gone out, and they were quizzing each other. She was quizzing him on like,
on
50s
music
tunes, setting up this scene. For later.
Uh-huh.
Joe, I'll tell you, this is the only thing I remembered about this movie, which I think is a compliment to it, because I liked this scene.
But it doesn't make any sense.
That
she makes that leap, that she hears these tones on her answering machine, and she's just like immediately, he's in trouble.
Because the first song he's beeping out is Help Me Rhonda, Help Me Rhonda. So she's...
So what?
So she knew.
Wait, if you answered your machine, yeah. If you turn on a machine and you heard like tones, wouldn't you think like, especially after you just had a date with a guy, wouldn't you think like, oh,
you fucker?
But what I'm saying, putting yourself in her mentality, wouldn't you think that maybe she's like, oh, how sweet? He's texting, he's doing little songs on my answering machine.
Yeah.
That's nice. Beep. And like walks off and goes and showers or whatever.
Maybe there's a passage of time where he called several times and we just got to get to the chase scene, Joe. I don't care, because I thought that whole sequence was clever enough. Well, I'll overlook the fact that she came around to it really quickly. I like that idea.
It's a good idea. They just didn't flesh it out enough.
They're trapped in the icebox, and if you haven't seen the movie, so they only have access to a phone, and there's a phone book in the freezer. There's Michael McKean and Ben where they're being
kept. For some
reason,
there's a phone line in the freezer that they're in.
And also a phone book, and they're able to...
Somehow
they know the address.
No, it was a shipping crate.
It was a shipping crate. There you go. So they have the address on there, and they have that. The only way to get out is to call a number, but they can't talk.
He has a calculator and a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
And that's how... It seriously looked like a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, it did.
And he's able to dial her, and apparently once you hook up a calculator to a phone line... It has tones.
Yeah.
And
more notes that he's playing than there are numbers on that thing.
I think
if somebody broke it down, because he plays like five different songs, right?
I wonder if someone's ever dedicated like someone on the internet with this and tried to figure out what the numbers are.
I'm going to do it if it's not there.
Please do.
I don't think it would be a very long test. I think you get two songs in and you realize you can't play these notes.
And at what point does the answering machine cut off?
That's a good point.
You're playing like
well,
tones.
She had multiple messages. Remember, she gets in the cab and they're following them because one of them's Broadway. They see the neon lights.
I liked that
on
cab
Broadway.
Driver.
Yeah, me too.
I liked the cab driver, and I was pointing that out. I was like, wow, there's another racial stereotype.
Oh, he was.
There's another racial stereotype in this movie, but he was wearing a Yankees cap, so I give it a pass.
all the cabbies.
we had to know that they were in New York. that was how we let people know. It was probably the Toronto crew. Yeah.
That's a good point.
You know what? And the thing is, that's the scene that I remember the most when I saw it the one time on cable, too.
Yeah.
Was the driving around trying to figure out like what the songs were.
Yeah.
But not because it was good.
Oh, really?
I don't think we remember it, Joel, because it was good.
I did. I thought it was a clever idea.
I think we remember it because, one, it's a clever idea, but also because it's musical.
Yeah.
And that's going to stick with
people,
you a lot longer.
Yeah,
it's like patterns and music.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll give you that.
I can't really think of anything else that I want to touch on in this movie other than I think the jewel heist thing was weak.
Yeah.
I think that it was weak. We didn't need the jewel heist. We didn't need all the ridiculous B-plots that were going on in this movie. We had already set things up with some conflict with the mob boss that he had to agree to get some space from the mob boss.
Mm-hmm.
And like you could have played off the fact that like the mob saw that they had this valuable robot
and
now we're trying to get him.
That's right.
That would have been fine.
I thought that was going to come back at some point, like you said, and it never did. And again, the same thing with the car stereo thieves, that gang, the Los Locos boys or whatever the fuck they're called.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen them come back.
That's a great idea too, at the end, to kind of have them come to his aid. That would have been nice.
Well, because he's dying, you know, he's falling apart and he looked all punky and stuff. So it's like, he's one of their boys now or whatever.
He has that taxi driver scene where he like puts a mohawk on
himself
and gets all ratted up. You know what? Yeah. What this movie needed, what Spider-Man 2 needed. Remember near the end where he saves the train full of people?
Yes.
And then they all stand
up. They stand around him.
That would have been, that was a great like New York moment.
It's a good touching moment.
Yeah.
And it would have been a little bit more of a...
Been poignant.
Well, poignant, but it's also an indication that like everybody that Johnny touches becomes a little bit better because of him.
Yeah.
And including these guys. And, you know, we saw that happen with Fred. We see this happen with Ben. We could also see that happen with these gang guys. We don't have to focus too much on it.
No.
But we just see that they recognize, hey, that's our boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they all kind of show up and start beating ass on some of these mobsters or whatever that are trying to fuck up Johnny Five. That'd have been really cool, man. I'm getting like goosebumps right now thinking about that because I'm like, that's a nice moment.
Well, maybe in the reboot, Joe.
Yeah, maybe in the
reboot. I don't know if that's actually going to happen because everything I Googled was like, oh, yeah, it's coming out in 2013. Well, that didn't happen.
I'm going to hop into my TARDIS and I'm going to go find out how that movie was.
All right, that's two Doctor Who references.
You're never going to stop me. Okay, so is there anything else that you want to touch on with this?
Not before we get into the good stuff.
All right, so
yeah, go ahead.
What do you think this movie did right?
Michael McKean.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a second thought about it. Like, those scenes between he and Johnny Five. Joe, have you ever had to act against an inanimate object or something that wasn't there, like green screen?
I've had to act against really bad actresses that are just as good as an inanimate object.
Yeah, the commercial I did. You were there.
That's not where I was going with it, but all right.
It's tough to do. I've never really tried to do it. I've seen people try to do it, and you don't realize,
Mark Hamill's biggest complaints when working on the Star Wars movies, that like all these, like Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Tony Daniels, all these actors got to hang out together. They all got to hang out, and like he was all alone for most of the filming for Return of the Jedi and for Empire, and that's why he was so excited working on Jedi, because they were all together again doing stuff on the Endor scenes.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, he had so much that he said about like working with the Yoda puppet and how it was really frustrating for him. So, yeah, no, I
it's
see
funny
where
you bring up Star Wars too, though, because Ewan McGregor, I think, does a really good job in the prequels of acting against people that aren't there in the scenes. I know he hated it too. And for every Ewan McGregor, there's a Hayden Christensen where he's just like looking through.
He can't act against living
humans.
People.
Exactly. He may be a robot himself, actually. So to see Michael McKean like really emotes and you know the scene where he's trying to patch him up and he's really giving it his all and man, he really fell for that guy. And you end up loving him at the end of the movie.
Yes, I think that's a sign of a competent actor though, someone who's got some years under his belt.
Yeah.
Who knows what he's doing. I've got to admit, the first time I saw this movie, Michael McKean was probably my least favorite part of it because I didn't recognize him at all.
Yeah.
I was more like, oh, I like Johnny Five, I like Ben because I'm a kid and I recognize those characters. Mm-hmm. Watching it again now, I completely agree with you. Michael McKean was the best part of this movie. He is the only genuine force that's in this film. And like I said, he's the most interesting because he actually has levels and he goes through a journey.
Yeah.
He's the only one that goes through a legitimate journey as far as a human goes through.
Yeah, because Johnny Five kind of did that, the same arc he had in the first movie. And it's more of the same.
And if that being the case, Ben should not have been as big a character as he was.
I'm telling you, he shouldn't have. Yeah.
He should have just been the catalyst to get Johnny there to New York, but it should have been more about this down on his luck hustler that works on the streets or whatever, and he comes across Ben in the midst of this toy deal. You know, we really should have been following his character probably for about 2-3 minutes before he runs into Ben, before we're introduced to Ben. And you know what? Ben could have already had Johnny. He could have already had Johnny. He's selling these robots on the street, and he's like, well, let me show you my workforce. And opens up the truck, and there's number five working and doing his thing.
Yeah, they didn't have to explain it away.
No, they didn't. No, Michael McKean was absolutely the best part of this film. What was the worst?
I'm probably going to jump on your bandwagon here, but man, a lot of little B plot stories.
Yeah.
From the heist to the toy makers to the
budding romance.
The budding romance to the mob guy who he gets the money from that we never see again. The gang, Los Loco Boys or whatever the fuck they were called.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a mess.
Right.
And long. This movie was longer than its predecessor.
Yeah. The thing that sets this part, well, it's not the only thing that's going to set this movie apart from the first one, but, you know, they really played up the input in the first one. And it was relevant though to the movie.
Yes.
That's how he learned things.
He needed books.
He did that in this movie only as a catchphrase. Not because he learned anything from it. There was no reason. There was no point where he would like learn something through like input or whatever. He didn't learn anything relevant through that.
Yeah,
that came
point.
Back into play later.
Yeah.
You know, at one point we see that he's reading Frankenstein and Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm.
But that was such a fucking blowhardy, like artistic, like
right.
I could totally like it's the obvious. Writers like, no, there's some heart here. He's reading Frankenstein and Pinocchio and he's learning. We did that already in the first movie.
Yeah.
All this stuff. He goes into the bookstore. He doesn't learn anything from any of it. There's no point in doing it. You could have shaved at least 3 minutes off this movie just from taking that stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Way too many B-plots. And just the production of this movie was fucking weak.
It felt flat.
Yeah. New York should be one of the stars of your movie when you make it like such a point that I'm making a movie in New York City. It's Johnny Five in the big city.
Yeah.
Let your city be part of the character. You know, let it be there. Let it be present. It wasn't. This could have taken place in Chicago, for all I know.
Yeah.
It could have taken place fucking anywhere.
Should have gone with the Toronto thing, since they shot it there.
They should have gone to Toronto. And you know what? That would have made more sense, because it's like, all right, maybe they can't, like, extradite fucking Johnny Five from Canada, since he was American property or whatever, and now he's in Canada.
Oh,
they
yeah.
can't get him. Now there's no fear that like the American government can try to steal him away because he's a free citizen of Canada.
I guess that blows that whole last scene though.
Where, yeah, it sure does.
They're trying to become citizens of the US.
All right. So if you were going to make another version of this movie, if you were going to make your reboot, what would you do with it, Joel?
I kind of want to. I kind of hope that they do reboot it. Although, to your point about the bookstore and like the whole, you know, he's trying to get input, and that's how he gets input, by like reading.
Now it would be so easy.
Yeah, it was now like, oh, I have Wi-Fi. I'm just going to download internet. Google. So they'd have to retool that plot there. But assuming we have the same characters, and it's the same sort of, let's see, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, I have about 7 here. I don't know about you. Well, one yeah. is the voice of Jim.
Yeah, yeah, I think I have the same amount. I bet you anything we recast all the same people.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, let's start with Ben then. My Ben, not too uninspired, but this guy could do it. Because you need somebody who can play comedy, play a little bit of fish out of water, but also be able to do the serious scenes.
Yeah.
So I like Dev Patel from Slumdog Millionaire.
Okay.
You know, he could play that role. Yeah.
All right. No, that's good.
You want to do yours? We're going to ping
pong.
Yeah,
yeah. We'll ping pong
on
this one.
Yeah, finally.
I know you like when we ping pong.
Well, this is a good movie we can do that with.
All right. So my version of Ben, I decided to go with somebody who wouldn't have, like you, wouldn't have to do an impression of an Indian gentleman,
guy, yeah.
A Middle Eastern gentleman. he could just be himself. He's definitely got a strong comedic presence.
Mm-hmm.
He's popular. So people would they'd know him, they'd kind of dig him. I went with Kunal Nayar.
Oh, interesting.
From Big Bang Theory.
Yeah,
he plays Raj in
oh,
the Big Bang
fantastic.
Theory.
That's fantastic.
I think that he would have been he'd be really good in this role.
Although you know that's not his actual voice he's doing. On
no,
Big
I know.
Bang
I know. Okay. He's doing but he is still
absolutely
descended from
he didn't
the
have
people.
To darken his skin
exactly.
The way Fisher Stevens did.
Exactly.
That's a good call, man. That's nice.
All right.
I almost went Aziz Ansari, but
that would be really good too.
Too funny though.
I think he would cheek it up a little too much.
I think you're right. I need some gravitas out of that role.
For Fred,
mm-hmm.
We need somebody who's a little bit more seasoned,
mm-hmm.
somebody who's going to be able to kind of drive the scenes. He's got to be kind of the, just like with Michael McKean, he's most likely going to be more of the driving force of this film.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to have some comedic chops, but also be able to play the heavy. I went with Jason Bateman.
Oh, interesting.
Uh-huh.
A streetwise Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen him kind of play that kind of role.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever seen the movie Smokin' Aces?
No, I haven't.
All right. So the final, like, 10, 15 minutes of the movie True Romance
yeah.
is this insane shootout in a hotel penthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Smokin' Aces is that scene extended out
oh,
for,
no.
like, 2 hours.
Oh, shit. I don't think I could handle that.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah?
It's really good. I liked it a lot. I don't think it got enough attention.
Is that a Richie Guy Ritchie
No,
movie?
It's not Guy Ritchie. It's God, I can't remember his name. He's the guy who did Narc. Irish name.
Yes.
I can't remember his name.
I'll Google it.
But no, it's a fantastic film. It's got the guy who played, Chris Pine is in it. That was actually like his first like big role. And he plays like one of these redneck brothers that's like, it's like 5 hit crews are sent to take out one guy and they all basically meet in the middle and start taking each other out.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, it's
oh,
such...
Joe Carnahan. There you go.
Go.
He's the poor man's Guy Ritchie.
Yes, he is. Jason Bateman plays a character in that movie, and he's kind of a streetwise, like...
Interesting.
But he's in hiding in a hotel room, and these two investigators, I think it's Ray Liotta
mm-hmm.
and Ryan Reynolds, they show up and they start questioning him, and like Jason Bateman's drunk... He's trying to keep it together though, and so he's got like this really funny scene where he's got Ryan Reynolds. He's like, all right, you smack it and you lock it, put the chain on it. Like it's really funny watching him like act like a little hustler. But there you go. That's my Fred.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I wasn't picturing him just because I've never seen him in that type of role. An actor who I have seen in this type of role before can kind of play like the streetwise, you know, hustler, but also he's got a heart. He can do the comedy scenes, but man, is he a hell of an actor. And I'm talking about Sam Rockwell.
Yes, sir.
Sam Rockwell has done, he's done roles like this before, so it's not much of a stretch for him, but yeah, he put the leather jacket on.
Oh, yeah.
I can totally see him being the Johnny Five's right man.
God, there's nothing he can't do.
Right?
Thank you. I love Sam Rockwell.
So I'm going to move on to Sandy.
Okay.
The chick who, you know, the prerequisite love interest here. I had some trouble with this one, because you can really go a ton of different ways, but I'm going to go Lacey Chabert. You know who she is?
Yeah, from Lost in Space.
Lost in Space and Party of Five. And Mean Girls.
Mean Girls.
She's the dumb girl in Mean Girls.
Yeah, Gretchen Wieners.
Yeah, there you go. I couldn't think of her name. So we've seen in that movie she can do comedy.
That's so fetch.
Exactly. And she's just got to be a pretty face, but she's got to be able to have some acting chops, especially if you're acting against a Dev Patel.
No, I can see them together. That's good. You know what? I think that Lacey Chabert actually has more acting talent than this character really needs.
Yes. Yeah.
She's really good.
I think so, too.
I think she's very strong, but she's kind of been pigeonholed into, like, I'm the pretty girl. In a lot of her recent work, which is unfortunate.
What has she done recently?
She did the only movies I can think of are like Mean Girls. I could there's not another teen movie.
Where
she plays just like a pretty chick.
Yeah.
Who eventually the nerd talks to at the end, and she's like, "Do you want to do anal?" it's like the second time anal has come up in this discussion.
All right, well, let's go for three.
All right, so my idea of Sandy, I went with someone with a little bit more of an international flair because I kind of liked the idea of there being like this. The B plot that I did like in this movie was the citizenship B plot.
Yes,
I dug that.
I thought so too.
I thought that it was relevant to Ben. It was relevant to the journey Johnny goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because. You know, the Fred character kind of anchors that as the American living the American dream, you know, hustling, doing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of wanted to give this character, give her international flair. Whether she's a citizen or not, I wanted her to kind of be from somewhere else as well.
It is New York.
Even though this actress, I think she's American.
Okay.
But she plays an otherworldly, should I say, mother. what is that? Khaleesi? They call her Khaleesi. They call her the Mother of Dragons. I went with Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones, who's naturally brunette. Originally, I was thinking I might do Emma Watson, but we freaking named Emma Watson out the ass in the last few episodes.
We did.
But this chick looked like Emma Watson a little bit.
She did, didn't she?
She resembled her. And so I was like, I almost went with Emma Watson. So instead I was like, okay, who's my backup on this? I went with Emilia Clarke.
Nice.
I think Emilia Clarke could play, like, she could bring some of that, like, the English accent out.
Oh, I like
and so that way she could also be someone from, like, she's already gone through that journey.
Yeah, yeah.
She's already gained her citizenship. She understands the Ben character a little bit
so
more.
So they relate on that level.
Yeah, because
they're both foreigners
in
a foreign land.
I never bought the connection between Sandy and Ben in this movie.
That's the problem. Yeah, it's the worst forced love story because it's like, at no point did I believe that she would be into this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he's totally a means to an end for her. It's a job. It's a business.
And that's the only way this girl plays it. That's the only way that, what's her name, Cynthia Gibb, plays this character, is that he's a means to an end until she finds out that, like, oh, I've been, you know, trying to recite stuff. Oh, you like me? Okay, let's like each other now.
I know, right? Yeah.
All right.
No way that plays out.
Hmm.
Unfortunate.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the next character that I went with was the leader, the ringleader, if you will, of the crooks.
Yeah.
Oscar.
Oscar.
And
Boss Hogg.
You won't know this guy by his name probably, but you'll know the character as soon as I tell you what he's played. I went with Wallace Shawn.
Oh, I love Wallace
Shawn. You know
him.
Yeah,
yes.
Because you love The Princess Bride.
Inconceivable.
Yes, he plays Vicini, the Sicilian. I think he would be fucking fantastic.
Oh, my God, that's great.
I would basically want him, I would direct him to be Vicini throughout this entire film.
Are you mad?
Yes.
That would be fantastic. that beats the hell out of my pick, which was Jason Alexander.
Jason Alexander is still a good pick.
He could
for
do it.
It,
too, but it would just be a more manic version of it. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
They could have a manic
the
off.
Manic
those
off.
Two.
So, okay, did you cast the crooks?
I did the two crooks.
Okay, I did as well.
Now, mine are a pair, so I'm going to cast them together.
That's fine.
Because I kind of feel like with crooks like this, you
Jason Mewes and Kevin Smith.
Almost went that route, but I don't think they could pull this off. But no. So we haven't really talked too much about the crooks, but one of them is kind of spindly, skinny, and he has a bit of a conscience, which I was disappointed that never played
again,
out.
That never materialized
like
in anything.
The holes, and especially when like they're beating Johnny Five to death, I thought that was going to be the moment where...
A great moment where he just drops the X and I can't be a part of this.
Exactly, but he doesn't do it, you know? So you've got that guy, kind of a bit of a conscience, a bit of a weasel. But the other guy is like he's just in it for the money. He has no conscience.
I didn't recast him as this person, but you know who he reminded me of?
Hmm.
Have you watched Breaking Bad?
No, I haven't.
Oh, forget it.
I know. Forget well, spoil it. Go ahead.
No. I'm not going to say
it. Is it Sal?
No, not Sal.
That's the only other character I know from Breaking Bad.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Well, the audience will know what you're talking about, maybe, if they've seen
Breaking
Bad.
Just go ahead.
All right.
Just go on.
So you've got these two.
Jeff has got his hand on his face. He's
stifling.
He's just ready for us to be done.
Are we going long on this one? We might be. There's a lot to talk about in this movie.
It's classic. There's a lot, Jeff.
I'm starting to like it the more I'm talking about it. So
let's break down some of that. No, I'm kidding.
So the two crooks who have been together in another movie. They've played criminals in another movie. A much darker movie. Involving a wood chipper. So I'm talking about Steve Buscemi and Peter Stormare from Fargo.
Yes.
Because those are the same types of characters they play in that movie.
I love it.
So they're going to beat Johnny Five.
Oh, my God. They would be so good.
Right?
And they would really play up the whole... Okay, who would be the criminal with the conscience?
Oh, it would be Steve Buscemi.
It would be Steve Buscemi.
Just the way it was in Fargo, yeah. And then Peter Stormare is just an indiscriminate killer.
Yes.
So that's my pairing.
I went with a duo as well, so to speak.
Because
this movie is an 80s staple, you know, it's part of Short Circuit, whether you like it or not. Who's Johnny? They needed a song like that in this movie, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went with a duo that we saw in another 80s staple, a movie called Stand By Me. I went with Will Wheaton and Jerry O'Connell.
Oh.
Bringing them back as the crooks. Because I think Will Wheaton would bring some cool little nerd cred to this movie.
Yeah, he would, yeah.
Jerry O'Connell, also a sci-fi guy, like he did Sliders for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They're both... I like it because they're both kind of way drastically different.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry O'Connell would definitely be the heavy, the guy who doesn't care, who would like just beat the shit out of the robot.
Yeah.
Will Wheaton would be the one that would like be like, no, I've got a conscience.
He's
I can't
the brains.
Do it.
He's not the muscle.
Exactly. So, yeah, those two.
Oh, I like that. Interesting.
So, I guess we're on the voice.
The last one is the voice of Johnny
Five.
The
voice of Johnny Five.
The whole movie revolves around who you cast, Joe.
Well, I think I think that we're in good hands.
Ooh.
Because I think that this is a voice that people love. It's a character that people enjoy.
Okay.
It's not overdone. Somehow, this person can do no wrong. I went with Neil Patrick Harris voicing Johnny Five.
Oh, my God. Fantastic.
Uh-huh.
And, that's great, too, because he doesn't have... too much of a recognizable, like, you probably wouldn't know it was him.
Uh-huh.
You know, he would do a performance a la Bradley Cooper in Guardians of the Galaxy. But man, he's got some acting chops.
He's got voice acting experience. He was the voice of Spider-Man on MTV's Spider-Man show for a while.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's done a whole bunch of voice acting.
Interesting.
So this would be totally in his ballpark.
Oh, man.
I think that if he brought some of that NPH attitude to it as well, it would make Johnny Five a much more likable character.
Instead of just kind of like a cartoonish.
It was the guy who does the voice for Johnny Five is so like one note, so flat.
Well, and the problem, I don't know if you looked at his IMDb page, but like all he has in his background is cartoon character voices.
Wow.
Which, not to say that, you know, people who do cartoons aren't good actors. There are certainly some good actors out there who just happen to do voices. It's a skill in its own right.
Uh-huh.
But it's different,
yeah.
And you sometimes you just have to have a unique sounding voice to be a voice actor, but not really have the acting chops,
right?
And I feel like maybe that's who Johnny Five was, that guy was
probably.
Cast as. Sorry,
yeah, no, you're probably right about that.
Somebody though who has been on screen before, we know his face. He was on TV for several seasons and has a little bit of voice acting background. I believe he was in the Oz remake a couple years ago. He did the monkey.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about Zach Braff.
Not bad.
He's got a very recognizable voice. It's kind of, and as I was watching this, I was like, oh, this guy kind of sounds, he's doing a Zach Braffy thing. It's way up here. It's in the higher register.
Yeah.
But he's got better comedic timing, I think.
Absolutely.
Zach Braff does.
I like that with Zach Braff's voice would come a more neurotic kind of mentality that would come with Johnny Five.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, that's kind of how the characters played in this movie, though. Uh-huh. So I didn't take too much of a departure. I didn't go too dark with it. You got a director for this, Joe?
Yeah, I do. Who did you pick?
I went, well...
You probably picked... You know what? I'm going to go first because you probably picked a better director.
Let's say it at the same time. One, two, three.
I picked Raja Gosnell.
I have no idea who that is.
He directed the Scooby-Doo movie.
Oh, Jesus.
Scooby-Doo 2.
Why?
I like what he did. I thought that he... I love the Scooby-Doo movies.
Jeff has his head in his palm.
Jeff can have his head in his palm all he wants. He fucking loves Tremors, and that's fucking ridiculous.
I love Tremors, too.
The Scooby-Doo movies, though, are really well done. If you were a fan of Scooby-Doo at all as a kid, and did you ever watch the live-action movies?
No, I haven't yet.
You should.
Yeah?
Because he does do them justice.
I was turned off by Freddie Prinze Jr.
And that's what everybody says. Yeah? Everybody's like, I was totally turned off by Freddie Prinze Jr. I understand that, but all right. You know what? It's been a fucking decade. Watch those fucking movies. Give them a shot because they're actually really well done. The first one's fun. It's definitely a lot more. It's a lot more self-aware.
Self-referential.
Exactly. Whereas the second one, while still being self-referential, is more traditional Scooby-Doo. Like they're in a haunted house, and there's all this shit going on. A little twist, but you kind of already know where everything's going. But it's skillfully done. You have to have an appreciation for that source material to be able to translate that into a film. And I think he did a good job with it. I wouldn't trust him with my fucking Star Wars movies. I wouldn't trust him with my Marvel properties. I wouldn't trust him with fucking a Scorsese-style heist movie. But I will say that in a short-circuit remake, mm-hmm. I think this guy has what it takes.
All right, cool. I see that. Mm-hmm. I went with a recognizable name, or at least to you and probably most of our audience. And he's somebody who has some experience with robots having emotions, although he's done it in the animated form before. I'm talking about the aforementioned Brad Bird.
We talked
about The Incredibles earlier.
And
he did
Iron Giant,
one of my favorite all-time animated films. Fuck animated film, just films.
It's a good movie, man.
That is a great film.
Written by Tim McCanley, who also wrote Dancer Texas. Which is a really good fucking movie, too.
I remember that.
Yeah.
So I think Brad Bird, now that he's kind of made his foray into live action with Mission Impossible 4, let's give him a chance with the Short Circuit reboot.
I'm cool with that.
Good.
I think
who wouldn't be?
I think that's a good choice,
man.
He'd
be dead inside, like Johnny 4 through 1.
Johnny 4 through 1. And the villains. And Oscar. Ugh. Fuck Oscar.
Yeah, fuck him.
All right, so if you have any thoughts about Short Circuit 2, you know you can let us know about it on our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook, look in the search bar or whatever, put in Editing Bay, and you're going to find the girl with the bleeding eyes. That's us. And then just write us a little message. Let us know what you thought about our recasting, what you thought about our thoughts on the movie, if you thought we were wrong, if you want to stand up in defense of Short Circuit 2, or if you want to bash it along with us.
Please.
You can go ahead and do that there. You can also suggest other movies for us to watch and talk about. Right there on our Facebook page. We've also got a website, right, Joel?
We do. It is www. Not the edit bay.
Jeff and I both aren't even making eye contact
because
we didn't want to throw you off.
It's not the editing bay. It's not edit bay. It's editingbay.com.
Yes.
Check it out. But all the stuff you're going to find there, which is all of our past episodes and links to the live show and the t-shirts that you can buy to show your support, you can see that there. You can also see it at our Facebook page, which I highly recommend as well. Please give us a rating and like us and tell all your friends
on
about
iTunes.
Us.
On iTunes. You rate it. You can rate us and like us on the iTunes
I always do that, don't I?
Or whatever. Yeah, you do. You say it's on Facebook. You can like us on Facebook. That would be fantastic.
I want that, too. But all of the links are on Facebook,
yeah.
I guess is what I should say.
But please, if you do download us through the iTunes app, just go to iTunes, go to the Marketplace, find us, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know that you're listening out there. Help us grow the show, because that's going to help us get sponsorships and stuff.
Sure.
Because we would like to, maybe stop doing this completely for free.
Nah. It's going to be too legit. That's when I quit. I quit.
Make sure you check out our other brother and sister shows on the network. We've got Afternoon Delight on this channel.
Love that when you guys do that.
This week,
coming up?
Yeah, well, we've got last week, Jeff and I talked about, what was that movie that we watched last week? I can't even remember. Oh, Lucy. That's how good it was.
Ooh.
We saw the movie Lucy.
Oh, no. I want to see it.
We've got MVP, the most valuable podcast, if sports is your thing.
It's a good one.
Also, My Comic Life with Jeff. And
which I almost like better than this show, than our own show.
Oh, really? You like that better?
I think so.
The old Jeff and Sam?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should switch spots. Maybe we should do like an episode of them once.
Ooh, mashup.
They could do an episode of us.
Well, that would be called cross-promotion, Joe.
Well,
we can't have any of that.
No. That wouldn't be... No, what I'm talking about is we do an episode of My Comic Life. They do an episode alone
of Editing.
That's
what I'm saying. It would be cross-promotion.
Not all of us on one show, because we did that once before, and it was a fucking...
You know what? I'll have you know that I get more feedback about that. He's talking about the Street Fighter crossover episode from, what number was that? Somebody look that
up. It's like number six.
It probably was.
No, that was Leonard Part 6.
People love that episode. Yeah. I love that episode.
Okay.
You not so much.
Me, not so much.
You had a tough time.
I was having to play ringleader. I'm like, no. Like, okay.
Yeah, I was a bit out of control.
All right, so we've got My Comic Life. There's also the 8-Bit Gladiators where they talk about some video games. And also Jeff and I do the Quest on that channel.
What do you got coming up on there?
We are talking about Mega Man. I think that's what we talked about last week. We talked about
the original Mega Man?
The original Mega Man.
Dude, that's a hard fucking game.
Yeah. You should go back and listen to what we had to say about it.
I will. And you should too, listener.
and we got Angela and Daniel. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. But before we go, I want to prepare you for next week.
Oh, what are we doing?
We're going to be talking about a little movie that was filmed here in Dallas.
I don't know what this is. Is it Roach Man?
No. Yeah, we're going to do Roach Man all over again. We're going to do Roach Man again. No, this one is going to be a little movie. Features Bruce Campbell.
What?
Amy Adams.
Oh.
what's his name? Not Matt LeBlanc.
No.
What's his name?
Shit.
From Friends. Chandler. What's Chandler Bing's name?
Matthew Perry.
It's got Matthew Perry. It's got Elizabeth Hurley.
Was that filmed here in Dallas?
It was filmed here in Dallas.
I had no idea.
Because I did some extra work on it.
Oh, no way. Are you in it?
A little movie
self-serving motherfucker.
A little movie called Serving Sarah. We're going to totally talk about that next week right here on the Editing Bay. So go ahead, go watch it and get prepared. And Jeff, thank you so much, as always. Woo-hoo. Thank you for helping us out. Joel?
I love it.
Always a pleasure. I love it.
Let's keep it up.
Let's keep it up, and we'll be back with more input next week. See
nice
you later.
You're done. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.